In a very short time, we've been forced to reevaluate our values. Values related to employment, family, and home. And as we come out of two history-making pandemic years, connecting with others is more important than ever. But it's safe to say that the way we can and want to connect has changed. Just as we're navigating new norms in work and life, so are our clients. Whoever and wherever you are, if you support adults in learning and life, the Getting Connected podcast may be for you. In this season, we look to explore relevant topics to help you and your clients adapt to a new reality. So grab a coffee, give us just a few minutes of your workday, and let's connect. Hi, everyone. I am Ashley Hoth Murray, and you are listening to the Getting Connected podcast. I am here solo today to talk to you about the mysteries of apprenticeship. I've been in the field for more than 15 years now, and I can say that even as someone who's worked on several apprenticeship projects, I still find it confusing sometimes. There seems to be lots of changes. There seems to be different information out there, depending on who you talk to. So I just wanted to have a quick show today where we talk really about the basics and the truths of apprenticeship in Ontario. And of course, it seems to be a very timely topic because everyone's talking about the lack of people entering the skilled trades, because, you know, if you need a plumber and you can't find one, it becomes a real problem. And there seems to be lack of plumbers, lack of electricians, the construction trades, people in childcare positions. So we know it's an issue. So it seems like the appropriate time to talk about how someone gets certified as a journey person and how they go through the apprenticeship process. Interestingly enough, I have a friend who works as a prof at a college. It's a public college. And he was just telling me last week that he actually had a lawyer of a former student email him. He works in a non-apprenticeship program. But this lawyer emailed him to find out how somebody could become an apprentice and go through apprenticeship. And of course, my friend said, this is not something I do. And the lawyer responded, well, I don't know where to go. I don't know where to find the information. So instead of doing a quick Google search, this lawyer was emailing my friend for answers. And there shows a problem with the process. Luckily, my friend completed the Google search, found the information from the province, and sent the lawyer a link. But of course, it's then up to the lawyer and the client to unravel the information, which at first seems really simple on the province website. But when you actually go through the process, it can be a very different story. Because, you know, you go to the website, it shows you that there's four types of trades four types of trades. These categories are construction trades, industrial trades, motive power trades, and service trades. Right on the main page, there's a link to the full list of designated trades. Once you get into the list, then you're looking at compulsory, non-compulsory, things that are red seal, potentially. And it just becomes quite overwhelming with the number of trades. After you've chosen a trade, you need to find an employer. And this is honestly the most daunting stage for most apprentices because those that are new to that industry, those that are showing interest in something that they haven't been part of before, it's really hard to break in and just call an employer and ask them to sign you on as an apprentice. And of course, on the other side, we are seeing more and more employers reach out for apprentices as they are trying to fill the holes in their labor market. So once you have your employer, then you sign a contract with the ministry and the employer, and you start earning your apprenticeable hours. It sounds really easy. It reads quite easy. The three steps I said, there may be a little challenge in the middle, but it seems straightforward. but let's talk about the honest truth of what is actually happening in apprenticeship. So at the very beginning, walking into that contract, they've had some previous experience acknowledged, they are more likely to complete their program. And I don't think that's a shocker to anyone, since if you're already in the industry, you have the relationships with people that you already know, you have a sense of the job, you understand and already buy into the work culture, so obviously you're going to have a better chance of surviving. Also connected to this fact is that apprentices who receive their certificate have higher employment incomes during their training. So even before they're a full journey person, they are receiving a higher wage than those who do not complete the program. And so that just shows that, you know, wage is an obvious incentive to complete and to help somebody through the process to keep them showing up every day. And I would like to link this back to the last point that somebody working in the industry already before they become an apprentice probably had some connections. They had some reputation, and that allows them to get that higher wage during their apprenticeship. Now, when we think about apprenticeship, we often think about learning on the job, since the job training is such a key component of being successful. It's 80% of the apprenticeship. But the remaining 20% is technical training, and that's completed in class. Different colleges and other providers across the province of Ontario and in every province in Canada, they offer different types of apprenticeship training. So you may be someone who lives in Thunder Bay and not have access to the specific apprenticeship training that you want because it's only offered in Niagara. Or you might be someone in Niagara who doesn't have easy access to a program that's only offered in Ottawa. And this is a piece of information that I think is definitely lacking when we talk about apprenticeship, because it's not well promoted. We are just attempting to drive people into these programs to find employers, but we don't necessarily offer people the support to access that in-class training if they live far away from the training site. Apprenticeship can look very different from province to province, and I know we're talking about Ontario, but I wanted to highlight the national situation of apprenticeship as well. We are all struggling to sign up apprentices, but if you take a look at the length of apprenticeship for specific trades, there are some really strong varying degrees of time required. So if you look at, let's say, British Columbia, it takes 3 years to apprentice as a cook, but in Ontario, it takes 4. So it's an additional 25% of effort before you get that journey person certificate. And with all the investment somebody makes in apprenticeship, it can be hard to travel with those credentials unless somebody seeks a Red Seal qualification. And when I say travel, I mean leave the province that they're certified in. So Red Seal qualifications, these are exams, and it can get very confusing because you can people often confuse Red Seal with the apprenticeship certification, and they're actually two different things. So Red Seal qualifications are exams that can be written by a journey person to provide them with mobility to their earned apprenticeship. So somebody has to complete their apprenticeship, and then they can write or challenge their Red Seal exam. And if somebody is registered in a compulsory trade, so a trade that requires them to be a journey person before they can work and label themselves as that specific job, if somebody is registered in a compulsory trade, they are more likely to complete and get their certification. And of course, let's be honest, this makes sense. If you're somebody who really wants to work in a specific area and you can only work that job if you get that certificate of trade, then of course you would complete it versus somebody who may be able to work the job or a very similar job without the certification. Stats Canada talks about how older apprentices are less likely to complete their programs, and it's not hard to take the leap to think of why. Like I just talked about location being an issue for job training. Obviously, older apprentices probably have more family obligations. That means that they can't leave to take a program that's further away from them. And just larger financial obligations mean that somebody maybe can't take a reduced wage for the first few years as a journey person. Those who come from low-income families, they are also less likely to complete their apprenticeship program, probably for many of the same reasons of an older person. Larger financial obligations, difficulty with traveling to programming, like lack of access of transportation, and also perhaps less access to those business connections or employer connections than somebody who might come from a higher income family. So they might not have the same access to be signed on with an apprentice. Because I know in my personal experiences, the apprentices that I know have actually had a connection to their employer through somebody who knows somebody, or often even a family member. I think one pretty cool aspect of apprenticeship success is related to unions. So union membership is associated with better outcomes for apprentices if somebody is registered with the union in their first registration year as an apprentice. So they are less likely to leave their apprenticeship program versus somebody who is not registered with the union. And I imagine that speaks to support through camaraderie, feeling you're a part of something. But also, I know a lot of unions promote different ways to gain funding as a tradesperson, different tax rebates and programs. So unions really do support apprenticeship in Ontario. I think one of the biggest hurdles to apprenticeship is really the language that we've used for the last few decades, or the images that we use often to promote apprenticeship. If I walk up to somebody on the street that I don't know and I say, "Who is an apprentice?" they'll probably start talking about plumbers, electricians, carpenters, people in construction trades, or other jobs with hard hats and safety equipment. We don't consider the service trades the same way as we consider these more traditional types of trade or skilled labor. And the service trades can be very confusing, especially when we start talking about childcare and child development practitioners, or ECEs, educational assistants. There seems to be multiple ways to reach these goals. You could go through a different college program. There's even a lot of school boards offering programs. And I know that there is such desperation from school boards that they're actually using other credentials now to qualify people to come in the classroom depending on their needs. So it just gets really muddy and people get lost in the pathways. And because apprenticeship isn't the most straightforward pathway, it's often the pathway that people are least likely to take. So I don't know if it's time to start using different language. Maybe we can start talking about on the job certification and separate it from that skilled trade language. Or we can talk about being a registered journey person instead of an apprentice. But I think we will continue to have difficulties recruiting in these specific fields along the apprenticeship pathways until we start changing the narrative that we're focusing on, and we start to think about learners' access to understanding these pathways. So just to revisit the discussion around money and obligation to family or financial responsibilities, I think it's also important to talk about how people can access dollars when they're apprentices. And there are great tax rebates. There are some great programs. But it's not as clear cut or as well advertised as, let's say, OSAP or student loans. And I think that we really need to start talking about funding people or giving people really clear access to funding as apprentices so that we can help get them into these skilled labor jobs. And if we want people to see apprenticeship as a viable alternative to post-secondary, we need to market it that way. Of course, when I was growing up, we would have considered skilled trades as a blue-collar job. And, you know, it was always promoted that university or college was a better option if you wanted to make money. And we all know now that that's just not the case. But we still are trying to break down some of those stigmas. And even with my own children, I have three younger boys or humans that are currently identifying as boys. And we try to talk about apprenticeship as an option equal to college or university, because my oldest will be eligible for the youth program, the Ontario Youth Apprenticeship Program, OYAP, in just a few years. So we want them to know that that's an option, and changing that dialogue in my house and promoting others to change that dialogue within the house, I think breaking those stigmas is a really important way to change what apprenticeship looks like in the near future. As educators, it can be really difficult to find information about apprenticeship for our learners. It seems that the information is always changing and that programs have varying start dates, so those in-class programs, and it doesn't have the same cycle as traditional education. So we can't expect a program to start in September, January, and May. It could be all over the place, and that can be quite confusing for people that are not in apprenticeship. I would like to see the province and providers related to apprenticeship put more of an effort into gathering the data for educators and counselors to understand and search quickly to support future apprentices, because if they don't understand it, it's a really hard sell to sell to a learner. And I know a lot of literacy networks are attempting to put muddied information into palatable and attractive tools, but what we really need is a centralized hub where you can search for pre-apprenticeship training, apprenticeship training, and other supports specifically as an educator or literacy practitioner, just so the information is easily translatable, because our job is not just to promote apprenticeship. And I think it's because so many of us have gone through secondary and post-secondary, it's just in our nature to support people down those pathways first. So we need to have the tools to kind of break that and make apprenticeship a better option and an easier option to refer to. One key area of apprenticeship that I didn't talk about today was women in apprenticeship. I think that this topic deserves a show all to itself. So I hope you'll join me when I talk about women and apprenticeship on the next episode. Thanks for listening, listener, and I look forward to getting connected next time.